In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents. Fuck that shit.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. This is the episode where myself and Leanne dig deep into each other's lives, personal business, as we grow in our sisterhood, by asking each other a series of questions, and we take you guys on the journey with us. So if you're liking these episodes, don't forget to like, share and subscribe, all of that good stuff. And if you have any questions for us, actually, why not, with it now being the new year, why not email us and we can maybe add them on to the next episode? I feel like that would be quite fun. What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I actually really like when people ask us questions that we probably would never even anticipate. So bring them on. I'm ready. And I just want to say thank you to Roshan for
Why? Setting
me and letting me know that my face has been way too close to the camera up until this point. Thankfully, no, I've set myself up where I don't have to be so close to the camera, and you guys can appreciate more of just my face, more than just my face.
Look at us in our primary colours today. A bit of little green, a bit of red.
Still in festive mode.
Mm-hmm. On that note, though, of red, have you ever thought about what your red flags are that you bring to relationships?
Yes, I have. Many times over. But having said that, actually, as often as I think about red flags, I never think about my green flags. So I think we should do a fair exchange of red and green flags.
Okay. So I think one of my red flags is that this doesn't sound like a red flag, but I don't know how to, you know how I am when it comes to dating. So maybe you can tell me the correct word to use for the flag. But like, I love too hard from the beginning. So if I meet someone and I like you, I'm not multi-dating, you're now my husband, we're now married, I'm telling our kids. And so the standard or the expectation that I'm holding that person to, I think is quite high, and probably higher than is actually warranted, which I think is my downfall in dating, because then I feel like I'm being let down by people that maybe don't even need to shop for me in this way anyway.
Do you know what's so funny? I saw something on TikTok or Instagram the other day, and it said men date at 0%, like they start at 0%, and women start at 100%. Because you will meet a man, Shannon and I will be at a Costa, and she'll be like, that man's my husband, gonna marry him.
No, I need to go back to Costa because he really is my husband. Oh my gosh.
And she'll definitively say that this is her husband, and then it just will fizzle out because ultimately you're disappointed. Whereas men start from base and they're like, yeah, she looks good, whatever. let me see how this goes. And then they slowly build. It's almost like they're testing you to build yourself up to the point where they're like, okay, I can make this person my girlfriend. Whereas I think women often date in the opposite. It's a generalization.
You know what it is for me, like personally, is that like, I'm quite a busy person, yeah? So I can't invest in texting you in a reasonable time or like having phone conversations if I don't give a shit. So I can't be at 0 or 10 or 20% because you then don't deserve my time on the phone when I should be sleeping. Whereas if you come in at 100% and you want to have a phone call, I'm then going to allow that time. And I know this doesn't work. Like, I need to find a happy medium.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the happy medium would be multi-dating. But multi-dating doesn't work because I'll start calling you the wrong name.
No, this is what you need to do. And I've told you this before. You need to start dating multiple people so that you're not so focused on one person. And I think I've made that mistake before and just realized that. And even more so, until you're married, you're single. And I'm saying this as, a now married woman. Yeah, until you're married, you're single. So up until somebody puts a ring on your finger, you should be dating or at least investigating your options. Like, even if you're dating somebody exclusively, I wouldn't, like, block all the numbers out of my phone, that kind of thing. Until somebody has decided that, you know, or I have decided and that person has decided that we're making a decision to spend the rest of our lives together.
So you give me a red flag.
My red flag in dating would be that I have attachment style, anxious avoidant?
Yeah.
Yeah, so oftentimes when people say that they like me and that they are forthright with their feelings, I immediately pull away. And I don't believe them, or I'll be like, yeah, whatever, I don't take you seriously. Or I make them work that much harder to prove that they actually like me. And even then, sometimes I don't believe it. And I think ultimately that has a deeper meaning in terms of how I interpret my own self-worth and like whether or not I'm worthy of the love that's being shown to me. Mm-hmm. And I really struggle to accept genuine affection from people. So yeah, I say that's a red flag for me.
I probably have overlaps with that. Because I remember late last year, I was talking to one of my friends, yeah, and I was saying, why all the guys that are on me want to marry me today, want to do these things, am I not interested in? But the guys that I like, they're very nonchalant. They don't really show the energy that I need. And then I was unpacking it whilst I was talking to her, and I was like, growing up, I had quite a nonchalant father. So that's then my first understanding or experience of love or love with a man. So because of that, that's what I've then allowed to be normal with me in dating. But I know that I don't want that, but I still find myself in that situation. And I kind of had a light bulb moment of being like, do I actually like these people or do I like the tumor wound that they're filling?
Yep, 100%. A man could be like, babes, I love you so much. You're the most amazing woman I've ever met in my life. And I'll be like, yeah, right. What are you talking about? And somebody could be like, yeah, you're all right. Like, and I'll be like, oh, for real?
Like, yeah, it's annoying. Like, I was talking to my mom because I was showing her a message from this guy. And I'm like, this guy is telling me he loves me. He's in love with me. And I'm like, how? Why? What have I done for you to be exactly in love with me? Like, and I'm literally like to him, like, you're doing too much. Like, just chill. Like, this is, I don't understand how you got here. And I can't understand it. And I was saying to my mom, like, to him, I must be the nonchalant one. Do you understand what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm the same guy that I'm saying I don't date and I find frustrating to date because they're nonchalant. I am that woman to some men.
Mm-hmm. Amen. It's a problem. Okay, so what is one green flag that you have?
A green flag I have when it comes to dating. I don't think men care about this, but I would say I'm like super transparent. So I don't really play games. Like if you're dating me and I'm talking to other people, I'll tell you. If I'm going to link my ex, I'm going to tell you. If I'm going to I just don't play games. I'm very like direct. This is it. This is not it. You either take it or you leave it and we move on or we stop. And I think when I'm dating someone who's like that, I think it helps me to save a lot of time because often I've met guys who I've been like, oh, I'm dating loads of girls or they might say, like, I'm talking to lots of girls, I'm not trying to date yet, I'm not really in the season of dating, but when I am, then I'll date one of them. And for me, that doesn't really work because I like intentionality. So then it makes it easy for me to be like, cool, like, I respect you, I think you're a cool guy, but let me back off because we're not yin and yang here in this space. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. So I would say that's mine.
Okay, cool. What is a green flag for me? I think when I do like someone, and this is similar to what you've just said, but when I do like someone, I am very affectionate, but not necessarily in a physical way, because I'm not a physical touch is not a love language for me, or it's the lowest love language for me. But I find ways of demonstrating affection that are not verbal in nature. So I don't think there's anybody who's ever gone out on a date with me or dated me who doubts the sincerity of my affection. I think I'm fairly sincere and yet to a lesser extent transparent about my feelings, even if I'm not verbally communicating them.
Yeah. If you're dating Leanne, well, you won't be now. But if you was dating Leanne and she's making you a home-cooked meal that you know is banging, that was her non-verbal or non-sexual or non-physical affection.
Exactly. So shall we get into Dig Deep?
Yeah, sure. If you could change one thing about me, what would it be and why?
God, could change one thing about you, what would it be and why? I don't want to say nothing because that feels like
a cop out,
but I mean it's kind of true. There's not much that I would change about you. I think sometimes you have a tendency to not pace yourself. Like, there's an
triggered.
No, and it's not a bad thing, but it can be a bad thing if you don't moderate it, right? So you're obviously very driven, you're very passionate, and you're very, like, tunnel zone when you're ready. Especially when you want to get something done. But I also think that can, doesn't always, but it can come at the sacrifice or at the cost of your well-being and yourself. And so sometimes it's that conversation that people need to have with themselves to say, nobody's going to die if this doesn't get done. So let me prioritize myself for a second before I eventually have burnout and I'm of no use to anybody. So yeah. I think that's the... Yeah.
that's a fair assumption.
Okay. This question is actually somewhat, no, it's not the same at all actually. When others look at my life, what do you think is the lesson they can learn from it?
I feel like the biggest lessons that a lot of people learn from you is that, like, there's almost, like, no rules to life. I feel like we've, especially growing up in the UK, I don't know if it's a UK thing or if it's just a people thing, but I feel like you kind of feel like you have to go, like, do life very linear, do things in a certain way, like, have a child by this age, be married by this age, like, go to uni, do these sorts of things. I feel like, especially when you're growing up as a Black woman, we're very confined to all of these sort of things or milestones or pressures we put on ourselves to hit. And I feel like being close to you or even just observing you from far, you kind of just show people and others that actually you can really curate their own life. You can really curate your own life. And what that looks like for you is really and truly a personal thing. It's not about anybody else. And I feel like we've had conversations off the podcast where you've spoken about, like, your parents and, like, expectations for you from then and how you kind of, like, skewed away from that. But I feel like even if they were here now today, they'll still be really proud or even prouder of the version of you that you ended up being, even if it was different from what they initially might have wanted. because yeah. you are like so authentic, you are so intentional, you are so genuine with like everything that you do. And I think I think that's one of the biggest lessons, that you can literally live life on your own terms, and like we don't have to be confined to milestones that we've given to ourselves or that we've seen in movies that make us feel like we've got to hit certain things by 25, 35 or 45 or like whatever.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because I feel like I've been having a similar conversation with many of my girlfriends recently who are younger than me. And I think it's something that we all go through as people, not even just Black women, but just people in general. We all have these expectations or these ideas of what our lives should look like and where we should be. And we work towards that goal and life, you know, changes and we have to pivot with it. But it does get harder as you get older. I'm not going to lie. Every time I made a move or every time I changed my mind or I decided to go in a different direction career-wise or anything else, it got harder. And I think I'm now at a stage, and we've talked about this before in terms of different seasons in your life, where I am ready to kind of just be stable and focus on a certain set of things that I've landed on. But life might change again and I might have to pivot again. And it just is, it becomes scarier as you get older and as more people are dependent on you, I think.
Where do you think you found the, maybe not inspiration or drive, but like the courage to be able to live life like that? Because as you said, a lot of your friends who are younger than you, including me, we've kind of seen you and know your journey and been able to seek inspiration from it. To either like implement that in our own lives or even just take inspiration to know that like, okay, I didn't hit this milestone at this age, but I'm actually doing very well and it's okay. Like for a lot of us, you was that person for us that we saw that. So for you, where did that come from?
I think part of it came from my parents, even though they were very like specific about what they wanted me to do. My mom in particular never played by the rules. I mean, she was a Sri Lankan woman who, you know, after going to boarding school, became a lawyer at a very young age, got married, got divorced, which was unheard of in that time, had many boyfriends that her parents disapproved of, moved country, completely shifted. She was never afraid to be on the outskirts of popular opinion. And so I think that is something, I don't even know if it's something that I've consciously adopted, but I think because I'm so much like her, it's just one of the characteristics that I've adopted. Like, I don't think I've ever had to think about having the courage. I've just never been afraid. There are other things that I'm deathly afraid of, but that's just not one of them for one reason or another.
That's a really nice story to learn that about you.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but we just wanted to say if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button.
Unapologetically Black.
Okay, my turn. So what do you need to hear from me right now?
When are you coming to Jamaica again?
I mean, I want to pack my bags and move into your house, spare room. And I'm not going to leave.
Barry will be happy to have you because you'll say that you're way cleaner than I am. He might just want to marry you and, you know, annul our marriage.
You're very silly.
It's fine. No, I mean, I think we're constantly talking, right? So there isn't too much from a friendship standpoint that I need to hear. Actually, what I do want to hear from you is, are you okay? And how are you feeling at this time? Because it's been a very difficult year. And I think sometimes we forget to take stock of where we are, although you generally do a good job of that. And really just like release our feelings by saying them out loud. I don't know if you want to do that now, but yeah.
I definitely feel like I'm okay. Do you know what I feel like? Yeah. I think, because obviously you were saying this year, like last year, but I feel like the year before that, so I feel like 2022 was like a year where I would I would say for the first time I experienced like depression, like, I was down and out from March to November straight. And then I remember when I started 2023, I was like filled to the brim with gratitude because I was just like, I can't believe I beat that. I can't believe I overcame that. And it made me really see life differently, but also made me realize that like when I really thought there was no way out, I still found a way. And I kind of feel like when I then navigated grief at the end of 23, part of me felt like I had to go through what I went through in 2022 to survive what I went through in 2023. And I feel like that's so cliche to say, like, oh, like you grow through what you go through. And all of those sorts of things. But I definitely think the only reason why I'm able to be okay is because of what I went through the year before. Because normally I would be honest and I would say like, oh, I'm floating or oh, I'm sinking or my head's above the water. But I feel like for the most part, although I have moments where I don't feel like I'm okay, I've been okay. So I wouldn't say I'm good yet or I'm great yet. In the season, people have said, like, take each day as it comes. And I think for me, that was actually too overwhelming to think about. But, like, taking each hour as it comes has taken off a lot of pressure. And I literally do it hour by hour. Like, even things like trying to plan things with people, I feel like I've been cancelling a lot or, like, not really sticking to it. And it's because I try to plan something in the foresight of, like, a week. But if I was to plan something for today, like, let's do this now, and I'm feeling, like, semi-good right now, then I can do that and I can commit to it. But outside of that, I kind of feel like it's probably best I don't make plans because something's going to come up, whether it's, like, me mentally or, like, just life, like, something's going to come up. But, yeah, for the most part, I think I'm okay.
Okay, fair. What should we do more of and why?
So, I think, because our relationship started, like, us, like, working together and building something together. And then within that, we built, like, a really strong and, like, sick friendship. I feel like, no, and then within that, or on top of that, rather, you then now live abroad. I feel like we then have to be more intentional about, like, quality time. And I think something that we both, like, absolutely love is traveling. So I feel like that would be something that I'd love to be able to do more with you. And I know, like, with your job, you're obviously afforded a lot of times to be able to travel somewhere. And sometimes you might do, like, extra days for yourself, which I think is important to have those self times. But I'd like to be able to put some money aside so that I can be like, oh, Leanne's going to be in India for 4 extra days. Let me go to India for those 4 days and chill with Leanne and then stay on by myself or whatever. So that we can also have, like, more experiences, time and memories shared face-to-face, but then also so that, like, we're able to experience something we both love together.
Yeah, it's true, because we both love traveling and we've never traveled together, not out of the country.
Yeah, like, the first time was me coming to Jamaica the other day, and that was, yeah. I guess that was still a special moment, because it's like, that's like, well, obviously I'm begging it because I was born in England, but that's our home. That's our home, and we both went back. But yeah, I think to be able to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go on a plane and, like, with Leanne, I feel like that would be sick. Or even, like, separately, but going to the same destination. Because we both travel so much. Like,
yeah, no, it's true. It's true. We will do more of that.
Yeah, I think that would be sick.
Amazing.
Okay. How do you feel safe?
Do you know what's funny? Earlier this month, I had a situation where Barry was gone, he was away, and, you know, I heard a noise at, like, 3 a.m. in the morning, and I, you know, pressed the panic button, and I had the security company come out, and, like, after that, I just did not feel safe. And I think sometimes there is this emotional safety, but physical safety is really, really, really important, especially for women, and even more, that's even more true for Black women, given the disproportionate ways in which we're violated on a day-to-day basis, physically, psychologically, emotionally, all of that. So physical safety is a really big thing for me. And I think the right kind of energy really helps me to feel safe, physically. So there are certain people that I inherently don't feel safe around. And that goes across women and men. I feel like as women, our intuition is very strong, and it is a certain sort of skill that is required, or it takes time to trust your own gut implicitly. But I think that has always led me in the right direction. Like, it's never led me astray. And so making sure I'm surrounded with people who are well-intentioned and whose energy matches mine makes me feel safe.
Do you feel confident in your ability to do that?
To choose people?
Yeah.
More or less. I think there are times when I have... that it's faltered for me. I don't know if I've ever told this story before, but just as an example, when I was in undergrad, I was dating this guy, Trinidadian guy, and we had gone away for the summer, and we were coming back into the new year, and my girlfriend and I were walking down the pathway, and this girl, just never seen her before, she just walked straight past me. We probably glanced at each other, and I said to my friend after we walked past each other, I said, that girl is sleeping with, let's call him Danny. I was like, that girl is sleeping with Danny. And she was like, how do you know? And I said, I just know. It's just, I can't. And lo and behold, like a week later, she came over to my house. It turned out that we were living next door to each other. She came over to my townhouse apartment because that was our senior year. And she just spilled the beans. And she was like, I've been sleeping with Danny for the past summer. He told me not to tell you, but I couldn't keep it in my, you know, my conscience wouldn't allow me to do that. And that is how strong my fucking intuition is. Having said that, there have been other moments where my intuition has failed me. And I recognize that that is a direct, not that my intuition has failed me, but I have failed to trust my intuition. And I've ignored the red flags or that feeling in the pit of my stomach that says, Leanne, go and do this, or Leanne, avoid this. And it's always been to my detriment. And I think the reason that I failed to trust my gut or my intuition is because of where I was mentally in terms of not loving myself. But when I'm in a good space, my intuition never leads me astray.
I definitely have a good intuition now. But when I was younger, I don't think I really understood the power or the significance of intuition. And I didn't really understand like how to digest it. It was like I have this weird feeling. And I would ignore it and go against it. And then as I started to unpack what intuition is, not even using that word or that language at the time, I then found myself in a lot of bad and unsafe environments, because I would be like, something saying I shouldn't go. Let me go and see if something bad happens. And then it would. And then it got to the point where I was experiencing real life badness. And I was like, yeah, this thing is real. Let me take it on board. Let me stop. But yeah, I don't even know. The idea of intuition is so scary, but there really is great power in it and great security. Like, I actually feel like it's my superpower at times.
Exactly.
One day I'll explain this, maybe not on the podcast, I don't know yet, but I feel like with what I experienced last year, I kind of knew it was going to happen, but I was ignoring it because I thought, because I have anxiety, yeah, sometimes you can have intuition that told you something bad's going to happen. But that idea is what anxiety is. Like, anxiety is fearing about the unknown, or fearing about things that you may not have, like, you may not have the facts about right now. Do you get what I mean? So I think at the time it was hard for me to really tap into that, because I was like, this is my anxiety. I'm just worried. I'm just being scared. But I was correct. So I feel like now I'm like, yeah, now I'm at the top level of intuition. And I've never doubted the shit again. Never. Like, it's crazy.
Trust me, it will save you so much trouble if you just listen to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what will you always remember?
Okay, I've got two things. So I think something that I say to my siblings a lot, and something that I try to live by, is that how you act is a reflection of your character, and how somebody else acts is a reflection of theirs. And I think it's really, really important when navigating situations where you feel hard done by, or you feel like you're being taken out of character, to actually remember that, like, you actually can't be taken out of character. Like, when you decide to step out of who you think you are, that's a choice that you're making. And that's something I always try to hold really closely to, like, who I am and how I navigate the world on a day-to-day. And then the other thing kind of swings back to what I was saying about like 2022 and 2023, being that I think when I was younger, you would hear a lot like, oh, people would use the analogy of the tunnel, yeah, like, oh, you're there's light at the end of the tunnel. People will tell you that, but you see you're in a dark place. Fuck the light, okay? I can't see a penny drop of light and you're telling me there's light at the end of the tunnel. Like, nobody wants to hear that. Do you get what I mean? But I think when God wants to keep proving that you are his toughest soldier, you get to a point where you have to really, really hold on to the fact that there really is light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that I've never felt so secure and also confident in the idea that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I don't have to ever doubt that. No matter what happens to me now, I feel confident that I believe that there really is.
Speaking of strongest soldiers, I saw this thing on Instagram the other day and the woman was like, God, I am weak. I'm so dainty. I can't do anything for myself, because she's so tired of being this like strong, independent, fierce woman that she's like, just see that I am flawed, I am weak, and I need your support, whether it's God or men or friends or whoever. And does that ever, what do you do when you're in that moment and you feel like there is no light at the end of the tunnel?
One of my therapists in our first session, he was like, what are all the things that normally trigger you or can cause you to have low mood? Write them down. And what are the things that normally make you happy? Write them down. And every time we would do a therapy session, we would like talk about how I'm feeling today, and he would make a note of the score. And then one day he was like, your score has gone down so much, but like when we talk, there's not really an issue, there's not really a trigger. Like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, I don't know, I've just been feeling really down, I feel really sad. And with that, within that conversation, he was like, okay, well, let's go back to your list, your happy list, let's call it. And I realized there was nothing I had done on that list. So he was like, the reason why you feel down and you feel sad is not because life is stressing you or anything is going on, but you're not actually filling yourself up with things that make you feel happy. So he was like, for the next 2 weeks, why don't you just try and make sure you do at least two of those things on that list? So I say that to say is that I use that example or that time as a reminder when I'm going through that tunnel to keep filling myself up with all those things on that list, but also to allow myself grace if I don't even have the capacity to do that. Because sometimes people will say, like, tough love is important and, like, just keep going. But, like, sometimes you can't keep going. Like, sometimes you actually need to stop and feel the emotions and feel how you're feeling about that and process that for yourself before you take that next step. And I don't think there should be a rush with that process. So, yeah, I think that's what I do for me. So for, like, last year, something that I focused on doing, because I kind of knew I was going to go into a challenging season, I like bought lots of meal prep, because I know that when I'm stressed or when I'm down, I overeat a lot, I binge eat, or I don't eat. So I was like, let me just buy a healthy meal prep so that that's sorted. Then I was like, I'm going to make sure I go to the gym two or three times a week. And then I pay for personal training sessions. So now I've got no choice, but I have to go to the gym each week. And because those are two big catalysts to like making sure my mental health's okay, I think that's what I was able to say to you earlier, that I'm in a season of being okay, despite it feeling like very chaotic, because I was able to like almost pre-plan how to pick up myself rather than get into a really bad place and then being like, oh, I've eaten half a stone of my weight. Now let me lose weight and be stressed about that. Or now let me try to go to the gym. And I think the last thing I'll probably say on that, I guess that's 2 points. But the last thing I'll probably say on that is actually just like, just allowing myself to be vulnerable when I need to be. Be like, We've spoken about, you know, I think it was our first episode, we spoke about like the multifaceted nature of being a Black woman and like having to be strong all the time. But sometimes just need to remind ourselves that it's okay to not be strong for ourselves or even for others. And I think sometimes when I'm going through a dark tunnel, even if it's a solo thing, like it's only impacted me, I still feel like I've got to be there for the rest of the world. Like I'm some Superman or superhero, and I'm really not. And it's okay to actually put boundaries in place at that time to allow us or afford us the environment to heal and to grow from whatever it is we're going through.
Agreed. My brother always says to me, just because nothing is wrong does not mean that everything is okay. Like, it's not just about, I'm not depressed, so life is good. But what are you actually doing to make yourself happy? And I think that was my takeaway from what you just said. Awesome.
So what's the last thing you learned about yourself that surprised you?
Ooh. What is the last thing I learned about myself that surprised me? I don't know. Don't know what the last thing is I learned about myself. The last thing that I learned about myself that surprised me is, and this is something that I learned a very, very long time ago, is that, you know, I'm not actually as bad at sports as I thought I was. Like, I'm not the most athletic person. People who know me as Calamity Jane because I'm very clumsy. I'm always tripping over myself, although I like to think of that as an endearing quality rather than an embarrassing one. But fun fact for people who don't know, I played a lot of sports at high school on like actual teams. So I played basketball for my high school. I swam for my high school for like a year. And more recently, I went to a pickup game with, I used to play tennis as well, although not for my school. Recently, a friend of mine who's a basketball player, or he trains a basketball team, he was like, oh, you used to play, so come and let's have a little pickup game, having not touched a ball in God knows how long. And I was still pretty decent. So, yeah, that's the last thing that I learned about myself that was surprising, is that I'm still not as bad as sports. Shan's laughing because she thinks it's funny. It's true, I promise you.
No, I'm laughing because I'm like, I feel like I just learned that about you, that you was into mad sports before. And also because I was absolutely terrible at basketball, but I was really, really good at netball. And I remember going to basketball tryouts and everyone just being like, what is she doing here? Like, this is not going to work. So I would just go to all the basketball trainings and train, but I was never basically a part of the team. And I did that every year in secondary school. I was just like, I'm just going to turn up.
See, but I was never good at netball. Never. Just wasn't my thing. So, yeah, I would say that's my surprising fun fact. What do you always carry with you?
I feel like I always carry with me vulnerability.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like that shows up with me, like, no matter where I'm at, if I'm at church, if I'm at work, if I'm talking to the man that I don't have, if I'm on the podcast, like, I feel like vulnerability always shows up. Like, I don't shy away from being vulnerable. And it doesn't have to be in the most, like, deepest, darkest depths of who I am. But I mean, like, if I see an opportunity to help someone and it might mean tapping into vulnerability, I think I can do that at ease.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that this works, our friendship, and by this I mean our friendship, but also the work that we do and this podcast, is because we're oversharers by nature. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's any shame in showing ourselves, you know? And I think that makes it a lot easier to be a good friend, be a good partner, be a great enemy. And yeah, so hopefully everybody that's listening gets that as well, that we are, this is who we genuinely are.
What's something you always carry with you? And I guess the answer could also be something physically.
For me, it's a practical thing. So not something that I carry with me every single day, like when I'm leaving the house, although I would say that this necklace is probably something that has become something that I wear all the time. But my mom, many years ago, there are so many things that I carry with me everywhere I go. But my mom, several years ago, gave me a, what do you call it?
A rape alarm.
No, a tweezer.
Oh, sorry. I'm like, a rape alarm. She's like, no, a tweezer for my lashes. Yeah. It's because she was like this. I was like...
No, it's like pulling.
I'm like,
no, she gave me a tweezer, but the tweezer is in the shape of a black woman, which as I've said in this very podcast, my mom was Sri Lankan, so she wasn't black. So it's poignant that she gave me that, because I think that she saw how much I identified with that side of myself rather than with her own ethnicity. That's another story for another podcast. But I travel with it wherever I go. Like, if I go on holiday, it's coming with me. And there are so many times when I've moved country and I can't find it, and I'm like, fuck, I've lost this thing. And for some reason, I have loads of my mom's stuff, but for some reason, this thing, just like, if I lose it, I panic over it. But every single time, I've managed to find it in the most random of places, like in a suitcase or in a handbag somewhere or at the bottom of a drawer. And I've never, and so I always think that that's her, like, making sure that she knows, or that I know that she's around. Is the fact that that keeps it, no matter how many times I've been reckless about losing it, it always shows up some way, somehow. Yeah. All right, folks, that was our last question. For those who love this episode, you know, like it, share it, subscribe to the podcast. We're so excited for our new year of episodes and guests and everything else. So stay tuned and stay unapologetically black.
And, sorry. And if you have any ideas, I spoke about, like, if you have any questions you want us to answer, to put that in. But if you have any topics you think is kind of going under the radar, that isn't, it hasn't gotten enough attention, it's something that we should speak about, then also let us know, because we'd love to welcome those ideas too. But happy new year, guys.
Happy new year. Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.